Hello, everyone, and welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema. I'm your host, Lara Chomans, and I'm joined today by film journalist Hugo Emmerzell.
Hey, what's up?
And our producer, Elliot Bloom.
Hello, hello.
Do you love what we do? Support us by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us get found by cinema lovers like yourself. To coincide with this episode on musical biopics, make sure to get your tickets for our film club screening of Todd Haynes' Velvet Goldmine, which technically isn't a biopic, but we kind of wish that that's what every biopic was like. You'll find the link for that in the show notes. It feels like the year has only just kicked off and we're already super stacked with musical biopics. We had Robbie Williams as a monkey in Better Man. We had Aznavour. We have a movie about Maria Callas coming up. But the biggest one is definitely James Mangold's depiction of Bob Dylan's early years, A Complete Unknown, starring Timothée Chalamet. So we're going to dive into that in a little bit. But first, Hugo, what have you been watching lately?
Recently, I went to the cinema by myself and I was joined by one other stranger in the screening room to watch Den of Thieves 2. Pantera, starring Gerald Butler.
Wow. I hear that's terrible.
No, it's actually quite great.
I mean, okay, so I always have to remember, like, whatever the general opinion is, Hugo will think the opposite.
That's so correct, but you have to imagine that this is like a lowbrow kind of like rip-off or homage or prestige or whatever of a Michael Mann movie.
Okay.
The first Den of Thieves is very much Heat-coded. This one is much more Miami Vice-coded.
You hate Heat, right?
I hate it. I even hate Miami Vice much more. So this film is kind of like really leaning into the Miami Vice aesthetic, so I loved it a lot.
Just for the listeners at home, Hugo is always and forever wearing a Heat cap.
Today I'm not, actually.
Today he's not. It's like, what's different?
Surprisingly.
It's like, did you get a haircut? It's like, you're not wearing your hat.
There's an incredible heist in the film. They're robbing like a huge diamond bank. And it's good. It's just a good time at the movies, which is what we need.
I love a good time at the movies. I've been watching tons, like 2 movies a day for like most of the year so far. So I feel like my letterbox is really racking up some good ones. I watched Knock at the Cabin, for example. I know you're a huge Shyamalan fan, and I really liked that.
It's such a good film.
It's like, is it good? No. There's things about yes and no. It's, again, that like M. Night Shyamalan thing that we've talked about previously, where it's like all of the dialogue is so stunted and like not written by a human person, but like the premise is so cool and you're constantly thinking, what the hell is going on here? I don't understand. And I thought it was cool. I thought the ending sucked, which he never strikes the landing for me. But I thought it was really cool. So I felt like I had to tell you. And
nice. I think you're slowly converting into the Shyamalan fandom. That's what we need. The people that know me well know that I am very boomer coded. Not in the old man yelling at clouds type of way, but more in the vein of I am obsessed with old-timers like Van Morrison, Neil Young, and Paul McCartney. I once actually tricked myself into a Randy Newman fandom, resulting in me being in the top 0.01% listeners of the singer-songwriter and fixer-composer in my Spotify Wrapped in that year. Currently, I'm reading a book about all the studio sessions Paul McCartney did in his solo career after he split with the Beatles. And for a millennial on the verge of boomerdom like me, this can't be more exciting. So naturally, I am also the ideal target audience of A Complete Unknown, the Bob Dylan biopic starring Timothée Chalamet as the folk poet who became a rock and roll Judas when he swapped his acoustic guitar for electric set during the Newport Folk Festival of 1965. Electrifying stuff indeed. And yet, James Mangold's newest musical biography left me somewhat cold. Here you have one of the most influential and enigmatic artists of the 20th century in a surface-level film that never really gets to the heart of what makes Dylan so fascinating. It's not his musical genius, which he obviously has, but his unwillingness to be labeled or categorized that has made him such a compelling figure for over 6 decades. It's for good reasons Todd Haynes made a Dylan biopic in 2007 called I'm Not There, that uses 6 different narratives and lead actors to try to get to the core of the ungraspable and ever-shifting identities of the musical enigma. That film also low-key sucks, by the way, and again reinforces how hard it is to make a proper biographical film about the people that are larger than life. Recent biopics like the insufferable Freddie Mercury flick Bohemian Rhapsody and the turgid drag of an Elton John film Rocketman confirm that most people are in it for a cheap dose of nostalgia shot straight into our veins. It's the cinema equivalent of buying the best of album on vinyl, all the familiar hits without any interesting angle or artistic risk. That's why the fictional music biopic Wildcard, The Dewey Cox Story, was such an apt satire of this genre of films that is so aggressively formulaic it makes me want to scratch my eyes out and pierce my eardrums with a pencil too. Dewey Cox showed us that we can literally think of any incredible artist and make a by-the-numbers film about them. Is that really what we need, time and time again? And while I am saying this, I am reminding you all that a Bruce Springsteen film starring Jeremy Allen White, aka the guy from The Bear, is also coming up soon. When I think of good biopics, I think of films that somehow capture the internal energy of the people they cinematically evoke. The first 30 minutes of Michael Mann's Ali, for instance, convey the inner turmoil of the iconic boxer that finds himself caught in the crazy politics of America. Somewhat similarly, Todd Haynes' Velvet Goldmine managed to evoke an entire era of glam rock in what is not an official, but secretly a kind of biopic about David Bowie. This film is on purpose anti-nostalgia. It examines the strange relationship we have with music throughout our life and as we get older and the relentless passing of time gets the best of us. It's a film about where we put music deep inside our soul instead of just fetishizing all the cool tunes some genius has churned out. So bringing it all together, I want to raise the question. How can the frames of the camera capture something so mystical and profound about the creative geniuses of our time? And why is it so hard to make a musical biopic that's actually good? And as our friend Bob Dylan would sing, the answer is blowing in the wind.
So I take it you're a huge fan?
Of the movie. Well, I think you can hear from the cold open that I'm a huge fan of Dylan, actually.
Yes.
And I'm really just somewhat obsessed with the man because he is so endlessly fascinating, has done so many different things in his life. Mm-hmm. Is, like I said, so entirely ungraspable. And then you're watching a movie like Complete Unknown.
You're traveling in the North Country Fair.
I see no one wants to hear what a kid wrote last month.
Well, I like your songs.
Where the winds hit heavy on the borderline.
Who wrote this?
He did.
Remember me.
How about that Joan Baez, folks?
Well, she's pretty. Sings pretty. Maybe a little too pretty.
Your songs are like an oil painting at the dentist's office.
You're kind of an asshole, Bob. If
you go, and it just feels like it kind of demystifies the entire fascination that you have with the guy. It mm-hmm. just presents it in such a plain way that just lacks maybe mystery or intrigue or whatever. It's hard to really put our finger on it, and that's what the purpose of this episode is, of course. But I was wondering, what did you think watching Complete Unknown?
Yeah, I am a Dylan fan, not throughout all of the ages.
You don't like his Born Again Christian era?
Never got into it. I'm very much like from like the early work to like, I want to say like 76, where he did like the kind of country with all the fiddles and yeah. the like with Hurricane and Oh Sister and like that whole thing. That was my vibe. I worked at a publication where I had to write obituaries for people who hadn't died yet.
Yeah. You wrote one on Dylan?
Yes. You got to have him at the ready. You know, you got to yeah. have him locked and loaded when it happens. And let's hope it takes a while before it does. But so I did spend a whole bunch of time like with Bob Dylan, like trying to write his obituary, unfortunately. So I did.
For when he's knocking at heaven's door.
God, thank you, Hugo. That's beautiful stuff. And so I did know about the whole like Dylan Goes Electric, and I did I didn't know it was a big deal, but I don't think I fully understood why it was such a big deal until I saw Complete Unknown. I was like, oh, yeah, now it kind of makes sense, but also it kind of
Wait,
doesn't.
But this is exactly what's so interesting about the film. And I find the film, by the way, endlessly fascinating because I think the film doesn't work. And that makes it interesting for me because the film feels a bit broken on the inside. And then I am somewhat intrigued about the brokenness. But the huge finale of the film is basically the moment, right, where Bob Dylan turns electric and betrays the entire roots of the folk scene in New York in the 1960s. And this should be a climactic scene in the film. But in the way that it is presented, in the editing and in the directing, it just kind of completely fizzles out for me.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be any importance. Whereas in real life, retroactively, if you look back to what that moment signified, you could say that it was somewhat of the early onset of the death of like the flower power generation in the 1960s. Like the Manson murders later on in the same decade would also mark a definitive end with this hippie generation and kind of like lead into the new cultural climate of the 70s. This is huge, looking back at it. But in the film, somehow it's portrayed in a very confused and messy way. And it, doesn't really seem to register at all.
Yeah, it doesn't get the scope of like what that whole thing like triggered or what it coincided with.
And well, I can turn this into a question to you. What do you think this film is about? What do you think they are trying to say about Dylan, right? Is it about...
He's a bit of a shit.
yeah, that's maybe it. That he's just a bit of an asshole.
A bit of a shit. I don't know. I think this is kind of the broader question of what do we want a musical biopic to say? Because here, I'll just like start off with saying I did have a good time the entire time. The first like 15 minutes, I was a little bit like, oh, I don't know. This is too Timothy Chalamet for me. I saw Dune 7 times. So for me, that's the Lisa Nal Gaib. So like I was a little bit like, and then I kind of like relaxed into it a little bit and I was like, oh, it is kind of cool to see how he like moved through that era. But it's also kind of unnecessary because the only thing you can do in a movie like this is be like, this guy was amazing. And the only way we can express this is by zooming in on a lot of faces.
Oh my God.
Looking at him going, wow, this is amazing. So you are right in saying like, what, like, how is it trying to say that? You never feel like the electricity of like, whoa, you know, this was something completely different. It also didn't give enough context to what it was before Bob Dylan came in, because like we're both of an age where we weren't there in 1961. Assuming by the way.
Yeah, of course you have. No, probably I was in like in some existential spiritual way. Otherwise, I couldn't be the boomer I am today. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, you have his inspirations, Woody Guthrie and Peter Seegers in the film. They are kind of like instilling this folk sensibility into him. But at the same time, he's supposedly this cultural omnivorous figure that's soaking in everything. Rock and roll music, black blues music, the folk of like white hippie America, etc. But you don't really see that intermingling, this kind of like postmodern whirlpool of creative energy that is flowing around him. It's only concentrated in him. And indeed, like you say, that just results in so many boring shots where Timothy Chalamet is playing the guitar and singing, and you have a close up of people just kind of nodding and smiling and listening. Oh, this
being
is
like,
so
wow,
beautiful.
This is really different. Yeah. And the reason that I assume is like, is it that different? Because the movie opens with Seeger, who is already like a huge icon of the movement of like, this land is my land, your land, whatever. That was a very important moment in time and I'm butchering it. But that was like, oh, so he was already kind of like that folk guy that sang about like rights and about things. And I don't think it was that clear in the movie how different Dylan was, which is very much highlighted in I'm Not There.
Yeah.
Where people are like, wow, he was the first guy that like didn't do traditionals, but did the things that we were feeling. He did Masters of War. He did, and I don't know if it comes across in the movie even how special he was. It's trying to very hard.
Yes. Well, if we're talking about the trying thing, what I find very interesting about Complete Unknown, and we can relate that to the musical biopic in general, is that at least this film has the virtue and dignity to not do the entire life of Bob Dylan, right?
Oh, exactly. That was, that was
because
huge for me.
Because so many of these films try to do basically from the cradle to the grave narrative and the rise and the fall and the success and the drugs and the this and then the comeback album and the reunion tour and the tribute album and the best of compilation, etc.
I'm really glad we didn't get to the Traveling Wilburys on this one. But yeah, that is so true. And this is I think it's so boring, and I think this is a good moment to talk about Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
Exactly.
Columbia Pictures presents The Epic Journey.
Walking to the top of a mountain, man, you see, it's a long, hard walk, but I will walk hard.
Of the man who became a legend.
Walk hard.
The Beatles want to hang out, so I'm going to go do that.
With meditation, there's no limit to what we can imagine.
This Christmas.
I'm leaving you.
You can take the children, but you leave me my monkey.
Because if just a little bit of context for people who haven't seen the movie, because I feel like I talk to people all the time about this, and
it's
most
so quotable
people
as well.
Haven't seen it. So if you haven't seen it, please do. It is an incredible satire comedy that basically nuked the entire genre. It takes Dewey Cox, which is basically kind of like a Johnny Cash figure.
Yeah.
Played by John C. Reilly, amazingly. And it does just the musical biopic where in his early childhood, he saws his brother in half. And his father just keeps going, the wrong son, dad. And this is just what I think of every time. The same thing happened when I was watching Better Man, and the whole movie just like it's stringed together by flashbacks of his father going, you're not going to make it. You're not worthy. And it's just like, oh, I don't think it's possible to do the childhood to addiction to death thing anymore without just being immediately ridiculed by Walk Hard.
Exactly, because in Walk Hard, there's this very funny scene where he's like performing and on tour for the first time, and he's backstage and some of the other musicians are smoking marijuana and they're like,
no, Dewey, you don't want this. Get out of here.
You know what? I don't want no hangover. I can't get no hangover.
It doesn't give you a hangover.
Well, I'll get addicted to it or something?
It's not habit forming.
Oh, okay, well, I don't know. I don't want to overdose on it.
You can't OD on it.
It's not going to make me want to have sex, is it?
It makes sex even better.
It sounds kind of expensive.
It's the cheapest drug there is.
Hmm.
You don't want it.
I think I kind of want it.
Just kind of this constant joking about like these danger of drugs, which is such a turgid cliche in all of these films.
Yeah.
And then you have a film like Rocket Man, which is, you know, the narrative construct of that film is the AA recovery program of Elton John using flashback devices to look back into his life and huge parts of his life as well. And you're like, fuck, dude, Dewey Cox was already there, right?
Yeah.
It's like, and it's so painful. Like,
it's like a Simpsons did it kind of thing.
Exactly.
Where it's like, you can't do it anymore now that he did that. Like, it just ruined it forever.
And that's so funny with A Complete Unknown, which sometimes very closely kind of like resembles some of these Dewey Cox beats, you know, things that happen that are somewhat related to what you would see in that film. But then at least it has a tighter focus, which helps the film, I would say,
exactly.
A lot.
And a thing that I also have to compliment James Mangold for is that keeps the montages to a minimum.
Yes.
Because that to me is like, it makes my blood boil. And I went to the premiere of Better Man.
Robbie Williams was there as well, right?
Oh, God, was he?
Was he wearing a monkey costume?
I wish he was, honestly. No, like, I have a soft spot for Robbie Williams. I really do. But he is a caricature of himself. And I was calling my best friend before I went. And she's like, do you think he's going to sing? I was like, that man's not getting paid enough to get up on that stage and sing. But what we didn't take into consideration is that this is Robbie Williams.
And he wants to sing.
But then it was really awkward because we were in Tuschinski, which is a beautiful cinema, but also we're all really excited that Robbie Williams is there. So everyone gets their phone out to film. And then as he's about to leave, he kind of like scurries back and he goes, and through it, oh! And then everyone just goes, oh, phone, 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 I got to film him. No one's going to be singing right next to the speaker of their phone. Yeah. So it was basically quiet.
No.
While he was doing that, you could almost hear a pin drop because everyone was kind of like, oh, it was me, protection.
Accidental cringe, yeah.
And it was really cringy. But yeah, I do love him and I was excited to like hear his music really loud, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that one really ended up being a bingo card of all the cliches that it does. It's the father that says he's not good enough. It's him doing the audition. It's him thinking he's not going to get the audition because he's definitely not good enough. It's him getting the audition. It's then a montage of the first rise to fame, which is honestly a really fun sequence. After that, it just keeps flashing to him being on stage and his father in the crowd and his younger self is in the crowd and they're all monkeys.
Oh my God.
And you're just like, I can't do this. And then he like falls into the water where, because it's all too much, which is another one that like so many musical biopics do. It's like they get overwhelmed.
Some metaphor, some it's allegory.
So you don't understand, it's a metaphor for it being too much.
It's overwhelming.
He like falls into the water, blah, 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 blah. The music fades out.
No. Poor Robbie Williams.
But yeah, other than that, it's just like stringing together a bunch of montages. Oh, he gets famous and then he takes drugs. He gets famous and then he falls in love. He gets famous and then the divorce. And then the... And it's so dull. And what I also think that Better Man and Rocket Man have in common, which also really irks me,
except for the man in the title,
except for the man and the man, is that they are two biopics that are like actual musicals.
Yeah,
they're like needle droppy. Yeah. They we have to put in all the greatest hits. So we have to do Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. Oh, we'll have a scene where Elton John goes out fighting on a Saturday night. Or we need to put in She's the One in the Robbie Williams one. Oh, we'll do one where he like falls in love and has a dance.
This is maybe the thing that was missing in The Complete Unknown, that we have like knocking on Heaven's door and that we see Bob Dylan in heaven knocking at Heaven's door.
But, at the end it's
funny.
Line.
It's good that you mentioned montage because I would be remiss not to, you know, mentioned that Bohemian Rhapsody won the prize, the Oscar for Best Editing this year, whereas it's one of the most sloppily put together films
I guess probably released in that year.
The Academy really do love a montage, but there are some sequences in that film that are just so bafflingly badly put together. It's insane. It's like just like a first year film montage student from film school is trying to mess around with the material. It's completely unhinged, which only again reinforces how difficult it is to make these films, which are often feel unhinged and random and just too much of the same thing all over again.
Or do they never feel random? Do you always?
Yes, that's a good point.
I, at some point during Better Man, I just like, I had to pee and I was like, I have to pee. Okay, so what happens next? Okay, I bet the next scene is going to be this. And then I went to the bathroom and I came back and it was exactly what I thought.
Surprise.
So are they, I feel like they're hinged, if that's the word, where it's like...
We wish they were unhinged, but they are too hinged.
Exactly. They are too hinged to an extent where you can always predict what the next thing is going to be. They try to even like shoehorn that in. If it's maybe not the case, they try to ham it up so you can have the beats where he meets the wife. And the next scene, he marries her. And like all of
and then in some of these films, the next one is that he also beats the wife.
If they're even willing to admit that, anyone had script supervision, then maybe not. So on the contrary, what A Complete Unknown did is instead of making it one of those musicals, like we have to get all the hits, it is just kind of a chronological telling of the period of between 1961 and 1965, where he did actually write all of those songs.
Yeah. It's just about him making music and being an insufferable asshole, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, he's a dick, he cheats on his girlfriend, he is messy, and he's a skinny little bitch.
We stand a messy, skinny little bitch.
And I myself am a messy, skinny little bitch, so what am I even saying? So, yeah, it is like, is the purpose of this movie just like, because I have to admit that I had some tears because I'm just like so into this music, where it's just like, do you just sit there and listen to these beautiful songs and marvel at the fact that this guy wrote them?
And actually, Timothy, he does a pretty good job.
He really does a good job. He really, really does. Despite the fact that this is also something I wanted to ask you. He is incredibly famous. He might be one of the most famous actors. I have to note that James Mangold cast him in 2019 when they were originally going to make this movie. Then COVID happened and it didn't happen. In the meantime, Timothée Chalamet became
superstar,
the biggest actor in the world. It's quite difficult for me to get into him as Bob Dylan because he's so famous.
Yeah, you're just watching Timothée Chalamet being Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do appreciate about this casting so much is that our boy Timothy is really making the most out of the, let's say, press cycle around the film.
Oh my God.
Doing his insane performance, art stuff, goofy shit, like dressing up in weird, obscure Bob Dylan fits that he knows from Twitter and Instagram, doing these insane, like, Instagram live performances. He's just trying to make the most out of it.
He went on Nardwar.
Yeah, he went on Nardwar and got disappointed that he had to actually pay for the vinyl that they were going to browse in the shop. There's all of these funny things, so I like that a lot. But when I'm watching him on the big screen, I'm not really seeing Dylan, which to me is actually maybe okay as well. I don't need a person to disappear in the role. I need the film to do the work for me, not the actor, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I want the film to externalize and convey what's inside the actor and not the actor to become a perfect copy.
Exactly, because that is a trap that a lot of these movies fall into.
Because then you get this like Oscar prestige Beatty performance like Jamie Foxx in Ray, for instance, where it's like, oh, I, you know, taught myself how to be blind as well and do all the perfect mannerisms and this and that. But then the film in itself is nice if you've watched it for the first time when you were like 14 or something. Imagine rewatching Ray now. It's probably going to be quite an insufferable drag to do so.
Also because we've been over the story so many times. And I feel the same about Rami Malek with Bohemian Rhapsody, where it's like, God, did you see the teeth?
Yeah, exactly.
I did the teeth.
Do you like it? Do you like it? No, actually, we don't.
We hate it.
Well, we've been hating a lot, Laura, on many of these films. I think it's also time maybe to, you know, turn it into an upside. What are some of the musical biopics that we actually do like, and for what reason?
Can I shout on this podcast?
Yes.
I will just say it quite loudly. Kneecap.
There are 80,000 native Irish speakers in Ireland.
Ní fach I chéad gan teanga ach lá náisiúm.
Three of us have become rappers.
You may know the words, but you don't understand the language.
Is when you real for horse from Kjol?
George Higgle Studio, I guess.
What?
August Wrench Beats.
Can you like? Well, you hear Abbey Road, eh?
Abbey what?
Arca Shaw Boys and Roland 808. You honestly are going to be us, really? For Kyoto, if we like Grimmer, Winston Blastas, Ben the Dahi, Zealand Hip Hop, could you on your? Do I look like I want to read subtitles?
Kneecap for me came out late last year. It's an Irish movie about these kids in the hood that like start hanging out with a random teacher who's a music producer, and they become this like rap group. And that movie is so incredibly unique that you forget that you're actually watching a biopic, because it is about like how this band got started, and but there's enough story there that it warrants a movie.
Yeah.
This would, like, even if this wasn't a true story, it would be interesting. If it, and they play themselves, which is also really, really funny. That to me is, I was thinking about what's a really good biopic to me. It's like, Kneecap's a biopic. I even forgot that it was because it's so original.
Yeah.
And I thought that was incredible.
Can you imagine how codified the genre is that when you think of a biopic and there's a film that recently got released, you immediately already forget it because it doesn't adhere to all of these conventions?
It's just that good. I really, really, really like that. Do you have any that you're really into?
Well, Oliver Stone's The Doors is one that I very, very much appreciate because it actually gets to the core of the energy of the time, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
The immersive psychedelic aspect of all of it, just this insane chaos. It really plunges into it so strongly with such vigor. And that's what I really want from these films, to convey, let's say, this generational tension and momentum and energy, this idea that you're being literally launched into time and space through these musicians or whatever.
That one also has like really long performances,
exactly,
which really gets you in there.
It really draws you in a different way, stylistically, in the way that the performances are portrayed, and doesn't hit all the same narrative beats. So that's a film that I love very much. I'm suddenly like the biggest contrast possible, but I'm also thinking about Last Days, the Gus Van Sant film about Kurt Cobain, which is not a genuine musical biopic in the classic sense, but portrays the final days of a fictional character that's heavily based on Kurt Cobain before his passing away. And it's an elegiac film, very somber, very intimate, very small, but it made a huge and profound effect on me when I saw it. It's a very small and very sad film, kind of elegiac, about the passing of this voice of a generation, of course. Yeah. And it made a profound impact on me just because it is so small, because it is so intimate. And it's very scary as well just to see that despair and loneliness. So this is a approach that I like as well, because you zoom in on such a specific thing while conveying so much at the same time as well.
Yeah. I thought that was really, really good. And it's also interesting to just take a little snippet of life and even like making it a little bit more fictionalized, because I think that's the next topic that we can get to, is there are quite a few biopics that are completely fictionalized.
That take actual artistic liberties in the construction of the film around the personas of these superstars that we all love and want to see more of. Yeah.
Yeah, because we're doing a film club around Velvet Goldmine.
It doesn't really matter much what a man does with his life. What matters is the legend that grows up around him.
Brian Slade was the wildest rock star to come out of London.
The biggest thing since sliced Beatles.
But that wasn't enough.
We set out to change the world.
This movie's very special to the both of us. It was a VHS that I've had. It's the only VHS I've kept from childhood. It's
Oh my god, really? Wow.
Completely like bleached by this point, but it was a huge one for me. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I screened it once for a birthday party that I did, by the way, I'm now remembering. So yeah, it's pretty special to me as well. So it's a film by Todd Haynes, who also did the not so good, in my opinion, Bob Dylan film. But it's his second feature film, and it's a, let's say, huge artistic project of him, in which he tries to, at the same time, make a film about David Bowie in a fictionalized version.
It's Iggy Pop.
Iggy Pop.
T-Rex.
T-Rex. The entire glam rock era. It has all of the great music of that time. A lot of Brian Eno, a lot of Lou Reed, a lot of Donovan, etc. Steve Harley and the Cockney Rebel, and many of those songs in the film are performed by a band that is also consisting of Radiohead's Tom York and Johnny Greenwood.
Actually, Brian Molko from Placebo. Brian Molko,
yes, exactly. Placebo is also there. So there's just this insane synergy of 1990s culture, looking back at the 60s, 70s, 80s, etc., and looking at, let's say, how the shifting cultural landscape throughout the decades has made a profound impact on the people that were there to experience it in the first place.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of anti-nostalgic film that is also somewhat a remake of Citizen Kane, which is insane, with Christian Bale as a journalist for a newspaper who has to investigate the strange performance of this David Bowie character that staged his own death on podium. And he needs to write a story about that. But that is secretly also the story of his life, because he was completely obsessed with this glam rock culture. And it's not even an obsession, it's a way of life, because it's also a queer narrative about how queer people found themselves in the streets of London through this music. So this is doing a million things at the same time, classic Todd Haynes thing. But it's doing all of those things in such an impressive and effective way.
Totally. And the whole thing is so enjoyable to watch. Like, even like as a 12-year-old girl, I was obsessed with this movie.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that is a huge difference. If we look at the other Todd Haynes that you have mentioned before, I'm Not There, I thought that is heavily fictionalized Bob Dylan. So basically he takes like six characters and they're all like an aspect
of
Bob Dylan. But the problem with that movie is that I can look at it and be like, huh, that's really clever.
Yeah, very intellectual.
I love that you did that. That's
kind of
really
homework. Yeah.
At no point is it fun to watch.
No, it's
or
just homework.
Is it
engaging
or is it? And it's just like, you also already have to be a scholar of Bob Dylan to understand that, oh, that's him as Billy the Kid and that's him in this era and that's him in, you know, so it's more like an art project than like a good movie in
art
any
homework.
Sense. Homework is such a good, that's such a good one. I felt so bored and I was like, can it please be over? And
whereas Velvet Goldmine is just electrifying.
Yum, yum, yum.
It's fun all the time. It looks beautiful. The cast is amazing. It's horny. It's funny. It's sad.
Yeah.
It's all the things you need from a music film, basically.
Yeah, I really feel like maybe that is the solution to the current musical biopic, is there enough story there? The thing I mentioned about Kneecap, there would have been enough story there if it wasn't about them, you know?
Yeah.
Is the Bob Dylan a complete unknown? Would there be a story there if Bob Dylan wasn't Bob Dylan? Would Bohemian Rhapsody, would it work if these weren't actual people? I don't think any of them would. I don't think they would make interesting enough movies if it wasn't for the nostalgia factor. But maybe there's something to be said about the nostalgia factor.
Well, it's a thing that we obviously need, and the musical industry and the film industry obviously play into that and bender that, you know, like we want to go back to the musicians of our youth that we adored and that we idolize. And a film is obviously one of the perfect ways to re-experience all of those things. But we often discuss this in this podcast as well, that there's something sickly about it, right? This constant need for nostalgia is maybe also too much. And what these films maybe, and again, we're now coming to problems slash solutions, is maybe a good musical biopic is not gratifying your desire for nostalgia, but it is question, where does it come from? What is it specifically about these artists and the era in which they were famous that makes us nostalgic for it? And to investigate that, you get a deeper narrative. You get to something about what it really meant to be alive there, something human. And then that perfectly ties into your solution, which is the human story at the core of it should be good. And then it could be any artist as long as the story is good.
Exactly. It's also something I started thinking about is that this is kind of like the original IP movie, you know, because there is like a built-in marketing strategy around it. If you make Velvet Goldmine, it's like it's Christian Bale and it's a couple of random people playing a couple of random people who aren't really those people.
Yeah.
Okay. You can market that. But there's something to be said for this is a David Bowie movie.
Yeah.
This is a Bob Dylan movie. Cool. Everyone who loves Bob Dylan is going to buy a ticket. So it's kind of like Barbie in that sense, where it's like you make a Queen movie. Cool. You have all the Queen fans. You can do new lines of merchandise. You can do reunion concerts. You can do everything around this huge IP. And it works. And people flock to the theaters. These movies are incredibly successful. Elvis was another example that was wildly successful. They tried to do the thing that I say, where it's like, find the story. What's the story there? But they happen to do it through Tom Hanks doing the worst Dutch accent.
Am I the only one who ever thinks about everything security?
But I actually love Elvis. Elvis is for me the exception to the
rule.
Yeah, come on. Elvis is the exception to the rule. That is an amazing film.
Okay.
That is, for me, like, comes close to Baz Luhrmann's masterpiece.
Huh.
And I have this idea about Elvis, but that's maybe for an entirely different podcast episode. But I'll do it in one sentence. Elvis is kind of like the pop cultural Jesus. He had to die for the 20th century, new music, all of the Beatles, whatever, for everything else to emerge after that. And the film is about that. And that's beautiful. And I love that film so much.
I mean, and I thought Austin Butler,
yes, come on,
did a great
job.
The best
thing
ever. I like Austin Butler is
Elvis. He's still not losing the accent, and that's incredible to me as well.
Hey, I need to stick up for my man, Austin Butler. I hear you're single again. Please call me. He worked for 3 years with a vocal coach.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, he's still doing the Elvis voice. Like, try working with a vocal coach for 3 years oh, yeah, I used to, like, use my voice the wrong way. Let's go back to that, because otherwise people will be mildly
distressed. But it's also maybe the spirit of Elvis is still inhabiting his body. Like to believe that.
What do you guys make of a film like Priscilla, then, that isn't necessarily a musical biopic, but it takes a look into the lives of those around these stars and how they're affected by it, perhaps?
The problem with Priscilla for me is that it leans in too nicely into the main themes of Sofia Coppola's films, which is, you know, often young girls stuck in the gilded cage. Doesn't really, for me, explore that much around it. I did find the ending quite strong, but I found the film to be a drag as well. I would say that it is one of her least effective films that she has made.
I would disagree. I really liked it in the sense that I saw it with a guy friend. As a woman, like, seeing this, being like, yeah, that's kind of what that's like when you're 13 and like grown men hit on you and stuff. And my guy friend next to me was just like, what the fuck? Like, what is he doing? And this is kind of what happened. So it was kind of refreshing, like, as a woman, to see the way that young girls, like 13-year-olds, often get approached by these like more powerful men. And I don't know, I thought it was quite powerful. And it was another one of the things that Sofia Coppola does very well, is the no thoughts, just vibes. You know, it's very slow and it's very atmospheric in its storytelling. But it does refreshingly show Elvis as a fucking cunt, which he is. Like, yeah. Let's be real.
He's just a stupid, dumb himbo as well. Like, when he gets into his reading vibe, that's so funny to me as well, when he's reading these books.
Just to add to that, I think if I remember correctly, Elvis is also based from Tom Hanks's character's perspective, yes. Right?
Yeah.
Is that also an interesting way to go, rather than sort of telling this monolithic idea or this one story that we know that it's through someone else's eyes or it's through interpretation?
This is what Velvet Goldmine does very well as well, is just like circling around the radiance of these stars, right? And there's so much happening in the, let's say, periphery, yeah, or in this direct atmosphere around them. To feel that gravitational pull through different characters is, of course, a very strong mechanism to get to the heart of what makes these stars shine in the first place. So yeah. I do think that is a strategy that is very effective.
It helps to take a point of view that is outside the artist and not like the omniscient storyteller of like, this is what happened and this is what happened. It's like with this, what's his name? Not Colonel Sanders, that's the KFC guy. Colonel...
Oh, yeah, in Tom Hanks' guy.
Yeah, Tom Hanks' character, who cares? The Colonel. It's from his perspective and his own, like, visions of grandeur. It's like, I discovered this man. This means a whole lot to me. It makes it a lot more interesting for storytelling. And I think Almost Famous is another fictional biopic where it's not even really about the band. It's about the culture surrounding it. It's about this kid, like, and how he experienced this era. I think that's way more interesting than like hitting all the beats and crossing off the bingo card.
And on a final note, Lara, is like, we've been quite critical of some of these biopics, but is there one, if we can please our inner fan or whatever, is there a type of biopic of a specific artist or star that you would want to see if it gets released in the cinemas?
I mean, you mentioned in your monologue that you were in the top 0.01% listeners of Randy Newman. I was that for Barbara Streisand.
Hey.
I don't know. I think it could be cool to have like something like this about her. She was an insane woman in a good way. She recently released this book that's 1,000 pages long and weighs 1.5 kilos. I put it on the kitchen scale. So I think that could be interesting, but like, do I need it, or is it enough for me to just like sit in my house and blast Barbara Streisand?
Exactly, and think about it yourself, right?
Exactly, or like read about her or like all the things she did. So I don't know that we have Sam Mendes doing the Beatles.
I just wanted to mention that because then we go back to my opening and my boomer, you know, attitude. I am genuinely excited about these four Beatles films.
Me too.
Because Sam Mendes, for the listeners that don't know, he's going to do... four biopics of all the individual Beatles, also with all the intersecting narratives, of course, of all of these huge personalities as they are in the band, etc. That is very interesting because there's so many scholarly research done on the intricate inner workings of this band, and then to have four different film versions, basically Rashomon with the Beatles, right?
I'm honestly like kind of excited about this.
Yeah, me, I'm really, really hyped for that.
And like, there's already 1,000 Beatles movies. Did you see Backbeat, which is about like their early years, like where they had like their first drummer and stuff?
No.
It's a really small movie that like not a lot of people have seen, I feel, but it's really, really cool. It's not good, but it's cool if you're a huge Beatles fan, which I am. And
well, that goes on the Letterboxd watch list.
Hell yeah.
I want to throw a question to both of you. So we've been talking about how music and film intersect and collide. I'm noticing now more and more that musicians or superstars are now starting to act, not necessarily in films about themselves, but you have Ariana Grande, the lead role in Wicked. Tyler, Wicked. The Creator, the American rapper, is going to be in the new Safdie film with Timothy Chalamet, A$AP Rocky in the new Spike Lee film. Yeah, I wonder what you guys thought about this, whether we're open to it, seeing musicians take on a new form of performance in some way, or...
I personally, if someone's good at it, then fine. And I feel like for someone like Ariana Grande, who's been on screen her entire life, you know, she, it seems like a logical leap for her to make, because she started out on like Disney Channel or Nickelodeon or something, which we definitely can't call acting, but she has been acting as the character of Ariana Grande for her entire life. So I'm sure she's a great actress. I thought she was great in Wicked. But you also have, for example, Eminem, who plays himself in 8 Mile. Yeah.
And I also think it's not entirely new, you know, because you have like, even if we go back to Bob Dylan, you know, he's in Sam Peckinpah's Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. John Lennon was acting, Ringo Starr was acting. And then in the 1990s, tons of rappers were suddenly also acting. Yeah. Tupac Shakur, of course, in Juice, which we also screened in the film club screening.
Yeah.
Method Man in The Wire, you name it. Like, there's so many great artists that branch out into other things and it still works. I'm all there for it because some of these people are just very interesting to look at for a variety of reasons. So why
and
not?
And they're already performers.
Yeah, exactly. So they're already performing.
They crave the limelight. You know, it's kind of like potato potato at some point. Like, some of them are ghastly, but if you're good at it, then why not?
Yeah, exactly.
And the other way around, where like now Timothy Chalamet
has his album on Spotify.
Well, like he's doing SNL as himself, as the musical host and the host, which I think is very interesting. That hasn't been done a lot. So who knows? We might get a Timmy. This is an internet deep cut, but a little Timmy T rap album. Statistics.
Timmy, it's your boy Lil Timmy Tim. Statistic, yep. Statistic, yep, yep. Statistic, yep. Statistic, yep, yep.
What's one that you would like to see? Which stone has been left unturned, in your opinion?
Well, yeah, no. There was actually plans of making it, but I don't know what the status of it is. But there was this idea of making a biopic about DJ Screw, who is this Houston-based producer who made all of these Chopped and Screwed tapes, in which he would take rap tunes and other music, and he would just kind of like slow it down on his music production station, make it really leany, drugged out, trippy, and then have all of these rap collectives rap over these very slow beats. And he is such an interesting DIY figure, basically making these tapes in his own house, selling these tapes from the house as well. Police very often trying to raid the house because they were thinking he was selling crack in there. But he wasn't selling crack. He was selling his own rap tapes and his own beat tapes. And people were lining up around the block to get them. So this kind of like grassroots DIY musical innovator doing all of these things completely out of his own intrinsic kind of like creativity. That would be very fascinating to see recreational for me, at least, because it also gets away from, let's say, the music industry as this monolithic, huge mainstream thing, but shows something with more, let's say, creative drive and artistic risk. Something like that I would like to see.
It feels like there's, again, enough of a story there to tell.
Yeah. Yeah. Just that like I can already see the opening scene, a police raid, police coming in, barging in the door.
Why don't you direct it?
And then it's just a guy selling CDs instead of anything else, right? That's already a good start for a story.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, there just needs to be an interesting like take on the story, and then you know where I'm concerned, just like keep them coming.
Exactly.
You know, I'll be sad.
Yeah, that's also the thing. We're sheeple. We will buy tickets to see the things if it's a star that
I'll
we like.
See anything.
Exactly.
You can find all the info on our Velvet Goldmine screening in the show notes. I really recommend you check that out. And if you, like me, also love Kneecap, check out the interview that Elliot did with director Rich Pepiat. Stay connected with us at Celebrating Cinema and Lab by following at Lab111 on Instagram and Letterboxd. Do you love what we do? Support us by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us climb the ranks of the podcast charts. And don't forget to check the show notes for all the films mentioned, bonus info, and ticket links. This was a Lab 111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom, with music from Hugo Emmertzahl and artwork from Studio FFF. Thank you.
Thank you.